Popular Front presents Skeleton Key, a monthly report on contemporary far-right militancy all over the world. Only at patreon.com/popularfront. In this episode, we're speaking to investigative journalist Daniel D. Simone. He's going to be talking to us about the rise, fall, and legacy left behind by the militant neo-Nazi group from the UK, National Action. Firstly, it's been a while since they were really relevant in the kind of mainstream. People will, I think, have forgotten what is National Action, or they're, you know, in a country where it didn't get much attention. But for a while, it was a very serious threat, so much so that it was one of the first groups that the British government designated a terror organisation for a very long time. So I think let's just get, kind of do a timeline and go back to the start, but explain what National Action, like, you know, became. What was it?
Well, National Action was set up just over 10 years ago in 2013. The two main co-founders at the beginning were guys called Ben Raymond and Alex Davis. And Ben Raymond at the time was a recent graduate, politics graduate. And he then was working in a series of jobs, including double glazing salesman, helping claimants in a job centre and other things. And he was active online, including on Iron March Forum. And he was kind of someone who was into creating memes, other things. He was very kind of prolific online. And he ended up in touch with Alex Davis from Wales. And Alex Davis had been a member of the British National Party. And the British National Party now is basically seen as a complete irrelevance. But at a certain point a few years ago, it was actually getting a lot of support, you know, in elections, particularly European elections. And it was seen as a threat and a real issue because, you know, it's a far right party and it has had and has a lot of people in it who've had a long involvement in fascism, neo-Nazism.
Including the leader, Nick Griffin.
Nick Griffin. And so Alex Davis had been a member of that. And what sort of united Raymond and Davis and then led to them others joining was they took the view that, you know, the BNP was a moderate far-right party. It was trying to appeal to the general public, really. And it had been ultimately rejected and failed and it wasn't really working. And they were like, obviously, we're over 10 years on now. But at the time, they were both, you know, much younger. Alex Davis was still at university. Ben Raymond had just recently left university. And they viewed BNP and others and other sort of far-right groups in Britain, like if you think of the National Front, as really like old men's parties. And these are groups, they were parties that were seeking votes, that stand in elections, you know, campaigning, other things. So they wanted to create like a youth movement, a youth group that would sort of represent them, that wouldn't be full of old men meeting in the back of pubs. And that would, and that they also viewed it as that they needed to be like unashamedly neo-Nazi and racist. Like there's no hiding it to get votes, no denying that they admired Hitler and that they admired the Nazi era, where, you know, if you've got parties often on the far right that are seeking votes, even if they've got people within them who might have that inclination or history, there's often a denial of that because it's seen as unpopular. So they were very much, we need to be totally open about this. Let's just say it. And so it starts, you know, online. Ben Raymond's very active on Iron March. And you know, it really starts as an online thing and then grows from there. And it grows. It's only just over 3 years from when it's founded to when it was banned as a terrorist group. And they kind of took the view that they would try and if they could be totally unashamed Nazi and extreme, that they would get a lot of attention. And they were kind of right because they did get a lot of attention. Because if you're kind of outrageous and you'll boast about being a Nazi and Hitler and everything else, you know, there was quite a lot of press attention on it, not really necessarily investigative attention, just attention about how outrageous this was. So they would do publicity stunts, do demonstrations, very racist demonstrations, do banner drops, posters, and they were kind of using social media as well. And so they were in the press. You know, they had a Miss Hitler competition for female members, which got a lot of attention.
I met Alex Davies in 2013, just as they'd started out. I just started working at Vice, and basically they were like, right, we want a good story on like far right youth movements. And I was like, well, I've been keeping track of this one group. And I remember showing one of the editors there, and he was just like, what is this? Because it was, now it's completely, you wouldn't blink twice, but you know, they did kind of spawn this new style of like young, you know, hip kind of, I mean, for want of a better word, like hip style fascism. They were really like away from the whole like jackboot stuff. And I actually emailed them and was like, look, I want to write a piece, but I want to like meet you people to see like, is this legit sort of thing? What is this about? And I remember meeting Ben Davies, and I remember this was when he was still like kind of this overweight lad wearing tweed. He then went on to like lose weight and was more into the kind of Nazi aesthetic, but he was very much like professor look back then, even though he was about the same age as me. I would have been 23 at the time. And anyway, I met him. I went up to Birmingham and met him in this pub, and he was literally saying like, our plan is basically to kind of steal the Antifa aesthetic, which back then was still like cool. It was very like underground, not the kind of new wave of Antifa, like no offense to anybody, but it doesn't really look cool anymore, but the old school shit. And they basically were like, yeah, we're going to like take the whole like black block. We're going to take the aesthetics of it and just flip it and like kind of make our own version, but with neo-Nazism. I remember thinking like, this is super weird. In the end, I kind of had such an argument almost with Alex Davies that we didn't end up actually doing anything because he just blanked me after that because I was just like, you're a fucking dick. I was quite young at the time. But yeah, it was super weird. It was definitely, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was the first time they were like the progenitors of all of this like new style siege type Nazism.
Definitely. And like Atomwaffen and Division and others in the US were influenced by them. They were definitely influenced, and they were very influential. And they were, you know, with the social media, the other big thing, you know, they kind of cut, you know, like fast videos with kind of like, you know, a beat under it. It was all kind of quite edgy, you know, quite different from the BNP, the National Front, and others. So they were deliberately like attracting younger people, even younger than themselves, because they were in their early 20s, or, you know, I think Alex Davies may have been in his late teens, but they were attracting people at school, you know, in some cases. So they, and as you say, it started as Ben Raim and Alex Davies are more, they would see themselves as like, you know, intellectuals as well, that they've kind of got, they've read all the literature, you know, the neo-Nazi and extreme right-wing literature. They didn't see themselves as fighters, but they basically ended up attracting people who did, you know, so that the group ends up, it was never really more, it's hard to be precise on numbers, but you know, we're not talking more than 100 people really in terms of members, but it ends up around the country. So you got, you know, members in the northwest, in the northeast, Yorkshire, London, southwest Wales, so they've got, and Scotland, so they've really got like little cells everywhere, and they kind of do kind of demos. They all wear black, carry a flag, you know, they had like a flag that was the logo of the group. So it was quite deliberately, there was quite a style, you know, they had a style and they sort of promoted the style. And because they got a lot of attention, you know, Ben Raymond, you know, even was interviewed at length by a BBC series, this is before the ban, that was looking at like radicals, so-called, and they interviewed like an Islamist extremist, and then it interviewed Ben Raymond. And you know, and you sort of see Ben Raymond being interviewed on the beach talking about how much of a Nazi he is and how much of a racist he is. So they were quite successful at, you know, getting themselves out there and getting themselves visible by being very extreme. And the group was effectively ended up being run by a guy called Chris Lithgow, who was from Warrington in Cheshire. And he was very much, he was like a warehouse worker, lived with his parents. bit in, you know, he was a bit an odd character, but saw himself as like a hard man, you know, as a fighter. And but so he was very much, we need to kind of train, like we need to do training, like physical training. We need to be like a fighting force. So you do see there's other people who are involved in kind of physical training. They kind of do camps, they kind of do boxing. And so there's that side of it then that they see themselves as need to be like a fighting force to kind of take on other, you know, opponents, whether Antifa or whoever. And so that's, it becomes more of a threat as it develops, you know, to the point that you, you know, it will get on to after the ban, but basically it ends up with members, you know, who are in the military, ends up with a member in the police. So it becomes quite a security issue, you know, to be blunt.
It happened quite fast as well, didn't it? Like they spread really quick.
It's quite quick. And on the, you know, on the ban of it is that, you know, in the UK, people that don't live in the UK, you know, there's a, you know, there's such a thing as a prescribed organisation. So you've got, I think, more than 80 odd groups are prescribed, they're banned as terrorist organisations. That's defined as such by the government. That makes it an offence, criminal offence, terrorism offence, to be a member or express support for the group, promote it, fund it. And when National Action was banned in December 2016, it was the first right-wing extremist group to be banned in this country since the Second World War. So certainly it's the first under the particular, you know, terrorism legislation. So it kind of joined a list of groups, you know, includes Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, IRA, and a lot of international groups that, you know, would be, you know, jihadist groups, but other types of groups around the world. And the reason it was banned is because it started clearly to be, the authorities, you know, started, I think, to see and understand this group is actually a real problem. It's not just an unpleasant, horrible racist group who, you know, is potentially committing like public order offences through being racist and like being, you know, intimidating members of the public. It's actually crossing into, you know, so-called terrorism, like in terms of crossing into potentially breaching terrorism laws. And I think the authorities were not massively quick to see this, because in 2015 in Wales, you had a member who I define as a member of a National Action, a guy called Zach Davis, who actually went out and attacked a Sikh dentist in a supermarket, basically tried to kill him, you know, with a hammer and knife, almost would have killed him, was arrested and was convicted of attempted murder. And that was not prosecuted as a terrorist case. You know, here in the UK, like if you commit an attempted murder or a murder and the authorities see it as motivated by extremist ideology or terrorism, you know, it can be prosecuted as that. That's like an aggravating, very much an aggravating thing for sentencing and everything else. And it's like a defined route through, you know, in terms of criminal case. And this was not prosecuted that. The authorities later, I think, accepted, and the head of counterterrorism police even said it to me once, they kind of accepted later, they kind of got that wrong. So, but the year later, in the summer of 2016, we had a neo-Nazi extremist in Yorkshire who murdered a sitting MP, Jo Cox. He targeted her. She was the local MP. He attacked her in the street. You know, she'd been doing constituency business in a library. He knew she was there. He attacked her, stabbed her, shot her in the street, and was arrested. And this was very much, openly an extremist act, an extremist murder, and was prosecuted as such, and, you know, seen as that by the whole country. And National Action and members of National Action, including an official National Action Twitter account, basically glorified this and celebrated it.
Called him a martyr, didn't they?
Yeah, they basically, you know, through various tweets, celebrated what had happened. And that ultimately was the thing that led the group to being banned, because, you know, the government in its sort of prescription notice said, you know, it's basically, there's an unlawful glorification of terrorism, you know, and that, you know, and it can be reasonably seen as being encouraged to be emulated, and that and it's going to be banned. So it was banned in December 2016. And most prescribed groups in this country, to be frank, have not, I think, I don't know what the stats are, but very few of them end up with people being convicted or being members of them. You know, a lot of them aren't necessarily based in the UK. They don't necessarily have, you know, like a lot of organization in the UK. And even when we've got, like, say, like Islamic State group, you've had hundreds of people went to Syria, hundreds came back, and we've had very, very few people prosecuted for being members of Islamic State group. You know, we're talking about, I think it's about five that have been prosecuted, convicted of being a member. And like most, I think I worked it out at one point, most people who've been convicted of that didn't go to Syria, for example. They're people who were defined as members in the UK. Same with Al-Qaeda. I think since I've been covering like counterterrorism over the last year, I think one person was convicted of Al-Qaeda membership. So it's quite a rare thing. So when National Action was banned, I don't think there was necessarily an expectation that this would be, loads of them would be then convicted of being members, or there'd be like a massive counterterrorism effort. But that is ultimately what happened. You know, once it was banned, a lot of them carried on as they were. They could no longer openly use the name. You know, they couldn't use the social media channels, weren't available anymore, and these sorts of things. But they basically, a lot of them just carried on, you know, changed names of chat groups and basically carried on as the group. And what happened was, you know, it was more of a police thing than a kind of a security service thing, is that you had a police team in West Midlands were starting to look at some like stickers, racist stickers that had been put up by members of National Action before the ban. And when they went to arrest one of the organisers, a guy called Alex Deakin in Birmingham, in 2017, they found, you know, that he actually, when they seized a phone, it had Telegram groups on there that he'd set up, which were effectively just a membership of National, you know, it's like a continuation of NA. And you know, it was quite overt. And when the more they looked at it, they realized that in those groups, there were like a series of, they were like serving soldiers. There was a lance corporal in the British Army who had access to guns, who was talking about very extreme things, kind of encouraging people to be violent, expressing like a desire to be violent himself. And so I think at that point, it's like they're thinking, you know, oh my, like we really need, and there's other things that happen elsewhere. You know, you had a guy called Jack Renshaw, who'd been a member of the British National Party as well, Alex Davis and some others. He was in the Northwest with Chris Lithgow and others, and he goes into a, you know, he's basically very extreme neo-Nazi, and he basically hatches a plan to murder his local MP and tells others about it in a pub in Warrington. And that's then reported by one of the guys who are there, who's a whistleblower, Robbie Mullen, which then leads. So there's suddenly a lot of police activity that is basically triggered by after the ban about various things that are going on. So you end up with quite a big series of police operations into the group, with multiple people arrested for being suspected of being members, multiple people charged. And, you know, since there's so many different trials, I worked it out. I think we've got at least post-ban period, I think there's at least 22 different trials or prosecutions for terrorism offences or public order offences like inciting racial hatred and even sexual offences involving members. And so we've got 19 people since the ban being convicted of being members. You know, that's more than have ever been convicted of being in Islamic State and Al-Qaeda put together. So there's really been a lot of activity, and you've had bans for aliases of the group. So like there was, they kind of changed names. So they created a new group called NS131 that was just a continuation. So that was then banned as an alias, as was something called Scottish Dawn, as was something called System Resistance Network. So these are kind of like spawns of NA. That they're banned as well. And, you know, we've had a Vevelainen, who was a Lance Corporal's convict, who was in the military. We ended up with a police officer in the Metropolitan Police who was convicted of being a member. And that the police only got to that because the Iron March leak a few years ago, that, you know, anti-fascist dumped the Iron March kind of archive online, and led the police to suddenly realise we've got a police officer who's a member. So there's been a lot that's happened, you know, and you've put, you know, Renshaw was convicted of planning a, you know, preparing an act of terrorism, to put in normal words, planning a terrorist attack. And that was to plan into murder his local MP, Rosie Cooper, you know, with a machete. So it's a lot of very serious offences that people have been convicted of. And the last of three of the, you know, the, really the police kind of got to Raymond and Davis almost last. So they were two of the last to be convicted members. It was like they came quite late. A lot of other people were acquitted in first, and then they were only convicted fairly late on. It was like, because you had different counterterrorism teams dealing with different people, and it wasn't, frankly, always completely joined up. And it's sort of at the end, they almost looked and was like, how come haven't these two been convicted? So then they kind of went after them. So then they were convicted too.
Right, and they were associated with people as well that were maybe not fully Starred Up members, but there were people associated there with them planning bombings and stuff like that as well. I remember there was that one kid, I think he was, a pedo, and he was some neo-Nazi lad. I think he was in his teens, and he was planning a pipe bombing or something like this.
There's a guy called Jack Coulson, who was, he was from Bradford, and he wasn't convicted of a sexual offence, but he was certainly expressing some alarming, you know, views and other things he was saying. But he was actually arrested and charged before National Action was banned. I think that was one of the things that are leading into it being banned, because he was actually, you know, a member in Yorkshire, very active member, and then was arrested. And I went to his trial. It was in January 2017. In Leeds, and he was actually found not guilty of planning a terrorist attack, but convicted of having this explosives. And then he spent time in prison, came out, and then actually was later convicted of another terrorism offence. So he's spun up for having a terrorist bomb making manual. He was kind of quite young, was very much one of these people that comes in and then just sort of thinks this is it, you know, this is kind of what I've been looking for, because he kind of felt like he was very much not to, you know, feel sympathy to the guy, but felt like he didn't fit in anywhere. And then he's basically coming, you know, he's finding NA and thinking it's like, this is what I've been looking for. I'll just read a quote, because like he was very active on a forum under his own name, like before finding National Action. And then I went back on there after finding National Action, and this is what he said, and this is sort of gives an insight into like the radicalization of it. He says, now having joined a particular group of people, I feel welcomed and whole, like I truly belong. We are National Socialist Youth, and we fight for the emancipation of Europe. My plans in the future depend on my ability to construct munitions. The war is beginning, it's happening. We have to arm ourselves with whatever we can get, and it will be glorious when that day arrives. I can't wait to ethnically cleanse my city. So that is like an absolute, this like person who's a teenager has been casting around for something. And he'd been like involved. He'd earlier seen himself as a Trotskyist, an anarchist. And then he finds this. And that's what you end up with, you know, with what I've just read out. So it's quite, they were, NA were like very much groomers. Like Raymond was a real groomer. You know, he really got into some people's heads. Some of the people that joined were like a bit like Coulson, you know. They are quite troubled and quite, you know, they kind of need some guidance away from this sort of thing. And Raymond has absolutely targeted them. And you've ended up with quite a lot of people whose lives have basically been, you know, they've ruined their own lives by being involved with the group and ending up where they are now.
Yeah, and the thing with Ben Raymond, he was always this fellow where he was like I'm a genius. Like, I think he actually even said stuff like that. Like, I'm a genius. Like, I'm never going to get caught. This kind of thing. Always, I mean, very, very obviously implicated himself in literally all of it from the very start. Even did their graphic design, which actually I remember Alex Davies even telling me to my face when I met him. And the thing with Ben Raymond was he, like you said, this groomer guy, but he acted as if like, oh no, I'm not actually part of it. I've just got my views. And then right now he's in prison, right? Tell us about that. You actually doorstepped this lad, right? Why did it take so long? But why did he end up going to prison in the end?
Well, yeah, so he was, Raymond was, is very, very cocky, arrogant. He was the co-founder and was kind of absolutely instrumental in the group, everything about the group. And because after the ban, because you had different bits of the counterterrorism network, you know, different regions had responsibilities for different people, different individuals. And Raymond, really, because of the way it was divided, I think there was a decision not to charge him based on evidence gathered by a particular region, but the kind of regions on him didn't really put everything together in the way they might have done. And so, like, it was only after almost all of the other prosecutions, I think they looked at it. And I, as a journalist, one of the reasons we doorstepped him was because he was coming up so much. It was perfectly obvious to me, based on the evidence and everything else, that he had remained a member, a very important member. So when we went to doorstep and was to challenge him on it, really, to say, like, you're still walking around, but, you know, all these people are being convicted of being members of this group. You know, there's people who are plotting. There's a lad who's admitted plotting to kill an MP from your group. And we wanted to challenge him. And we went down to Swansea where he was living and spoke to him. He got into this bedsit where he was staying. Spoke to him and said, well, you know, we want to do an interview with you about this. He was all, you know, feeling like poor me. He's one of these very kind of self-pitying characters. And then he didn't agree to an interview. So we went back the next week and, you know, Dorster called an involuntary interview. You know, he sort of waited outside where he's living and he didn't get up until about 4:30 in the afternoon. He's, you know, that's how he operates. And then we ended, it was the hottest day of the year, I remember. And then we challenged a colleague and I challenged him and he just ran off. He just ran off because he doesn't like dealing with the consequences. He doesn't like being challenged. But what he used to do, this is such an illustration of how kind of cocky he felt. He used to turn up at some of the trials for membership for the others. And in one in Birmingham, he'd turn up at a few of the cases there and he'd sit in the public gallery laughing, making faces at police officers, actually sketching in court. You know, at one point, sketching an expert witness, and he was basically told to get out eventually by the judge, and that he was so sort of arrogant. So I think he was very, very, frankly shocked when he was then arrested and charged and then convicted. I think he thought we'd get off until the end, and then he did get one of the longer sentences. I think possibly the longest sentence if you add it all together out of everyone, because I think the judge understood, you know, this guy is really instrumental in all this. He's a groomer, everything else. So he'll be in prison for some time. And Davis then also was convicted and also got a pretty long sentence. But they were sort of their legacy, really, you know, is that they definitely inspired Atomwaffen Division without any doubt.
Well, they even met, didn't they? The leader of, what was it, Brandon Russell, yeah.
There was a lot of contact between Russell, Atomwaffen and Raymond, and a guy called Mark Jones, who was a member in London here, NA, who was also convicted of being a member. So they influenced AWD. Because of Raymond was very involved in Iron March, obviously Iron March had, as you know, you've shown like through all your work, Iron March had a massive influence on neo-Nazi extremism. And Davis and others and Atomwaffen were very much at the forefront of bringing Siege back as a big influence and promoting Siege and then Siege becoming this kind of dominant influence and ideology for on a whole load of groups, but also things that aren't groups, just in terms of, we had Fascist Forge, which was the successor forum to Iron March. That had a very bad influence. And since NA was banned, There's been other groups banned here, neo-Nazi groups. Sonnenkrieg Division was banned, which was sort of ultimately a spin-off of NA, because members of that had been in NA. Some of the younger people in that had been in NA. A Feuerkrieg Division, Atomwaffen itself was banned, and the base. And the base was very much organising on Fascist Forge. And in those, so the whole network, really, that spawned quite a lot of groups that really started with, I mean, started is perhaps the wrong word, but was very much found each other on Iron March, and then continued. And you know, there's a lot of people have been killed. You know, people around the world have been killed in attacks by people who are either part of this network or influence this network. So it's had a real effect. And if, you know, in the UK, guns aren't widespread, you know, so... But Pete, you know, NA members have attacked people. Zach Davis attacked someone. Jack Renshaw was going to attack someone. So there's kind of like, there is like a real life effect. And some of the grooming, there was sexual grooming within NA. You had quite predatory people in NA. Ryan Fleming, who's was in NA, very much an organizer in NA in the north of England. He was like a long-term, is a long-term person involved with Order of Nine Angles. So Order of Nine Angles, you know, we did a podcast about together a few years ago. You know, that was in very much in NA, and Ryan Fleming brought that in.
And just to cut in, worth mentioning as well, Ryan Fleming is a full-on convicted paedophile, been in prison for it twice.
Yeah, convicted of it. Yeah, yeah, no, and then jailed again after that for breaching a sexual harm prevention order by messaging young people on Instagram, kids on Instagram. So he's like a real predator, like and long-term member of Order of Nine Angles. And so Order of Nine Angles was in NA. You had a few different people who were associated with O9A in NA, not just Fleming, also a guy called Garen Helm, who wasn't convicted of being a member of NA after the ban. He was found not guilty of that. But he was very much associated himself with O9A. There's a guy called Craig Fraser, who was at one point, who has, you know, been in the British military, who was training NA members before the ban, physical training. So, and he was, had associations with very much, very, very much associated with O9A. So you've had quite a lot of, you know, NA was like, maybe it's a wrong term, but it's quite a broad church of Nazis. You know, you had different types of Nazis in there. It wasn't all one thing. You had different kind of people in there with different priorities and different kind of influences. So yeah, and you know, even afterwards, like, because it's a banned group, and it's an offence here to like display, you know, promote it on Twitter or whatever, we've had like kids who've been convicted of encouraging terrorism or other things, or support for a proscribed organization, because they've posted it on Twitter or wherever on social media, and they've never been a member of the group. They've never probably even spoken to anyone in the group, but it's kind of like, so that it's kind of had a legacy like that. And it's still, it was very, very high profile. All of the trials here have been a big deal. You know, I spent years going to these trials, really. I mean, there's been so many of them. And so it's sort of, you know, as much as it's kind of right that we report on those trials and everything else.
One of the instances when I really remember, like, wow, this is actually a pretty well-organized group. It was even before the kind of bombings and, well, you know, planned bombings and planned stabbings and stuff like that. There was, it was either Liverpool or Newcastle, I forget which one, but there was some kind of, I think, rally of theirs. And they just turned up there, like, broad daylight, all dressed in black, masks on, with, I mean, there was about 50 of them with their flag, you know, doing Hitler salutes. And there were like some people that were obviously like, what the fuck are you doing? Like anti-fascists and just normal people turned up and they were just like pushing them back. Like, yeah, go the fuck away. Like, we're on the street. We love Hitler, you know, like very barefaced and just pushing people around, you know, just storming through the place. No one, there was not enough people to really stop them. And they'd very clearly picked like the tough lads to be at the front of this, because anyone that approached them were just getting flinged. You know what I mean? I remember thinking, wow, that's actually quite a big deal. I do remember, I think Ryan Fleming was at that. He was definitely seen at that. And then a few of the others, the kind of tough guys. But yeah, it was like very well organized at one point. And I think it kind of, without National Action, there wouldn't have been Atom Waffen the way it was. I don't think any of this would have happened how it did. They really were like the progenitor of it, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And they were, you know, before they were banned, and, you know, and when they could just turn up and show themselves publicly and, you know, be members of the group, there was like quite a number of publicity stunts or marches and other things. The one in Liverpool was that, you know, there was a particular different event in Liverpool, but there was one in Liverpool where, you know, they were being very, very like extreme and provocative. And then there was then violence. I think that's probably the one.
They
did get run out of Liverpool as well, which they didn't boast about.
That's good.
Yeah. And they ended up sheltering in a shop in the station. So they were sort of, because, you know, Raymond and Davis, you know, they're kind of like, they're not fighters, you know, they're provocateurs, you know, and they radicalize as others. And I think that sort of, as much as Lithgow and others saw them try to have this kind of paramilitary fantasy that we're a paramilitary group, we're trained, everything else, it's quite a small number of them that would be really like that. And you had some soldiers who really obviously did know what they were doing. But the main threat was really that it's the threat of radicalization that they inspire people to carry out random acts of violence. So like Zach Davis in Wales, Renshaw was a member of the group before the ban. He wasn't convicted of being a member after the ban, but, you know, did plot to kill his MP after the ban. And he's quite a terrible example, really, of, you know, what happens to people when they become like this. Because, you know, he starts out and he described it in a lot of detail, because he had multiple trials after the ban, including he was convicted of grooming young boys, sexually grooming young boys. So he starts out, you know, as this sort of projecting himself. He was in the BNP and he was sort of, as you know, wore a tweed suit and tried to sort of present himself like this sort of fusty far-right conservative figure. And he only ends up as this ultra-extreme racist neo-Nazi who admits openly and gives a lot of detail when he gives evidence at the Old Bailey about wanting to do kill his MP, how he would do it, everything, all of his plans. He threatened to kill a police officer, ends up going to prison for life, you know, for planning a terrorist attack. So that's sort of like, you know, that is just such a terrible example of what happened, really. You know, that sort of, he goes from, he was, you know, he's actually in a promotional material for the BNP, wearing a suit. He was interviewed on their YouTube channel, went to the European Parliament, other things. And he ends up not that long later being convicted of planning a terrorist attack. So yeah, that's what NA is ultimately all about. It's very, very racist, nasty group. And I think that what you've seen afterwards, where NA was this sort of almost a bit of a bridge between, you know, the siege ideology, it's like there's no point in engaging in electoral politics and campaigning. There's no point in doing demos or trying to convince the public. It's about violence. It's about accelerationism. It's about, you know, bringing down society, really, and hastening the collapse. And NA at the beginning was sort of still doing demos. It was still leafleting. It would stand in the street and have a loudspeaker and try and convince people, join us and what we're right. And, you know, it's then banned and it becomes more extreme and it is then banned. And the groups that come after it aren't doing that. They aren't doing all the, you know, the ones that are banned are like very much the siege ideology. What's interesting is more recently you've got other far-right groups who are, again, a bit like more trying to appeal to the public. And actually, you had a guy who was jailed last week in Leeds who had been around NA, you know, who'd been around NA members even after the ban. He'd been on an NA march before the ban in the black uniform, everything else, doing the march. And he was jailed last week for, like, he's been involved after the ban with Patriotic Alternatives, which is like more of a campaigning group, you know. It's trying to appeal more to the public. It's quite, members show their faces, not all of them, but a lot of them do. And so you've kind of had a, maybe some people who'd been involved with NA, others are now going back to that style of campaigning.
Well, it turned into, you mentioned earlier, it turned into the new, basically just an alias was System Resistance Network, right? And that then, from what sprung from that was this fella, well, codename Blitz, right? He then went on to form Sonnenkrieg, which was the Atomwaffen division, basically UK branch, which kind of became more involved in abusing children, underage girls, than it did actually neo-Nazism. But a few of them went to prison. But that basically was a knock-on effect of National Action, right?
Yeah, no, definitely. Because, like, because you had first, you know, the first, after the NA's ban, the first, like, overt aliases were NS131 and then in Scotland, Scottish Dawn. And they're quite quickly banned as aliases, really quite quickly, within 9 months. And then System Resistance Network is then the next one. And it, and the mem, you know, although that was actually set up by Andrew Dimmock, Blitz, and Dimmock wasn't like a pre-ban member of NA. He had met, but members of the group, some of the members of the group had been in NA, some of the younger ones. So they kind of, it was also ultimately banned as an alias of NA, despite the fact the leader, the founder, hadn't been in NA, because there was enough of an overlap. And then that splits, because Dimmock is very much associating with Atomwaffen. At that point, Atomwaffen, there's all the Satanist ONA stuff. And so it splits. So, you know, like, he's, if you like, expelled for being a Satanist. And then he can create Sonnenkrieg division with a few others, quite a small group of people. And that is literally seen as the European AWD. That is literally what it was, you know, as you know, we've seen the chats and everything else. And then they're all, Dimmock and two others, were arrested the morning after we did a story exposing Dimmock and another guy, Oscar, in 2018. And obviously we worked on that together. So, so then they're ultimately banned as well. And I think and as you said, like Sonnenkrieg, that was very much this nihilistic, it's accelerationist, but you've also then got all of this encouragement of sexual violence, kind of celebration of misogynistic violence, even paedophilia, like that, anything goes, like the worse, the better. And that was definitely like an ideology that was openly like on Fascist Forge, on the forum. That was like absolutely whole threads justifying rape and sexual violence, everything else, ultra nasty. And that, Sonnenkrieg was absolutely the forefront of that, very influential at that, despite being a small group. So was AWD. And where, we, you know, as you know, where we are now with offshoot, you know, Nexians of O9A or, you know, like 764 and other things which you've touched on before, that definitely is. So it's, you know, NA starts up here and then we end up with just the absolute bottom, really, in terms of some of these groups, which are all about sexual violence and paedophilia. And, you know, members of Sonnenkrieg were all into the kind of gore chats where, you know, it's all of this people just dehumanizing material, really, and people dehumanizing themselves. And there was a lad, Jack Reed, who was at the time when he was convicted in 2019, he was the youngest person in Britain ever convicted of planning a terrorist attack. And his trial was in Manchester, and he was from County Durham. And how old
was he?
At the time he was 16 at the time when he was convicted. But he was when he was convicted. And he wasn't an NA member, but he was sort of on Fascist Forge. He was in chats with people who, you know, this network, really, and influenced by all. And, you know, that he was like a real example of literally was writing about how he had to dehumanize himself, you know, that there was like sexual abuse that he committed, and that's part of like, you know, stealing himself. It really, really like terrible. That's absolutely these ideas. Someone is literally absorbing it and making it real, you know, is literally putting into practice this sort of these ideologies. And that's sort of why, you know, we do try and investigate people, expose it and everything else and disrupt it. Cause it's not just a nasty thing that intimidates and everything else, which is bad enough, but it has like a real world consequence.
Yeah. And I think as well, they really did start this amalgamation of, well, not started, but at least this more like neo, like modern version of it, the next cycle of it, I guess. This amalgamation of like neo-Nazism, far-right, esoteric, and then into child abuse stuff. For example, like we just mentioned, you know, without National Action, there wouldn't have been Sonnenkrieg. Sonnenkrieg, from inside of their Discord, a lot of what they were doing was getting young girls to self-harm and then send them photos of it, carving their names into their legs, trading the photos. There was even the one young girl who was a member of Sonnenkrieg, but she was very clearly like, you know, abused and groomed, and they even carved the swastika into her ass. Like, this was like next level fucking depravity. I think you didn't maybe see as much of that in like National Action, or at least, I don't know, maybe on the inside. But I think with characters like Ben Raymond and Fleming, it was definitely, they kind of, I don't know, I feel like they set the ground ready for that. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no, I do. Absolutely. And there's like very much like a clear like timeline of these groups, and of like one group bleeds into another group, spawns another group. And so it's not like, you know, speculative. It's absolutely a development. It's like an evolution of it that's happened over time. And it's the net, you know, the Iron March network, when it fascist forward comes after, it's as fascist forward is like literally openly like a successor, you know, that's what they're about. And then they're promoting stuff that was produced by the Iron March founder and everything else. So it's like one thing after another. And, you know, so I think it's definitely been hugely influential. And I think it's interesting to think what would have happened if it hadn't been banned in the UK. What would have, you know, because the group wouldn't have just died away on its own. It would have carried on and would have had more of an influence if it wasn't banned. So I don't know. Obviously, there's all the kind of particular laws that are used to ban groups. They don't exist in the same way everywhere. So it's sort of it's a particular UK thing, the way it was dealt with. But certainly I never imagined that you would get so many people convicted of being members and prosecutors. It just never, you know, for example, the group that NA is often compared to, obviously very, very different groups and come from very different ideologies. But there's a, you know, an Islamist group in the UK, Al-Muhajirun, which is run by Amjim Chowdhury, which is seen as a radicalizing network, a bit like NA. It's not like a militant group with, you know, weapons or anything else. It's kind of a radicalizing force. And that has been around much longer than NA. It's been banned a lot longer than NA. And in the High Court, you know, various people have been found to be members by judges in civil cases. But no one has ever been convicted of being a member of that group, as things stand today when we're speaking to each other. And that's sort of an illustration. It's actually quite unusual to have so many people convicted of being a member of a banned group. So, NA really is like in all sorts of ways, like a bit of, you know, quite an interesting thing to look at, really, but not just because of the way it's all been tackled, but the way it sort of influenced people and everything else. And you've now got people coming out of prison who were convicted of being members. So, you know, that's going to be interesting to see what happens, whether there's further law enforcement focus on some of those people or whether they kind of move on and do something else with their lives.
Hopefully. So the two leaders, essentially, Alex Davies and Ben Raymond, they're in prison. How long are they in for now?
Ben Raymond got 8 years plus 2 further years like a license period. So he could potentially come out earlier than that, earlier than 8 years. He has to serve.
Yeah, he'll do half of that.
Not half. He has to do more than half. But but also now under the terrorism, if you're convicted of a terrorism offence, you can be kept in well beyond, because it used to be released at halfway point, but then it changed. So now you can only be released if the parole board satisfied you're not a risk.
Oh, so it's different now.
Yeah, it's different. So like there have been NA members who have not. So like a guy called Matthew Hankinson, who was convicted of being a member, he was released because his sentence ended, but he came up to the parole board and they just said, no, we're not releasing you. So it does happen that people are kept in. But Raymond, so he got that. I need to double, because Alex Davis got quite a long sentence, but I think he, on appeal, got it slightly reduced. So I can't, off the top of my head, remember exactly what he got. But he got the longest sentences at the time, like the highest sentence for member of a banned group has gone up since then. But at the time, the longest sentences were being handed out. Like Lithgow got 8 years, for example, because he was a member, he was basically the leader. Deakin got 8 years. Vevelainen, the soldier, got 8 years. Raymond got eight, and then this extra bit on. I think Davis maybe got the most, but then it was reduced on appeal. But, he had others that got less than that. But the longest sentence is Jack Renshaw for planning to kill his MP, which he got a life sentence with a minimum of 20 years. So after 20 years, he can apply to be released on license, but he may not be released. He could remain in prison forever with a license if the parole board never think he's safe to be released. And he can always be returned to prison at any point the rest of his life if he breaches the conditions. So, that's the longest sentence anyone's got out of any of these cases.
Right. But as it stands, within the next couple of years, a lot of the worst, most active National Action members will be getting out of prison. Hopefully it doesn't, but I can see at least a few of them starting new networks.
It's always possible, absolutely. I mean, it's, like these kind of groups move on so quickly, and the kind of people now who are like say 15, 16, sadly that is the age of we're in some of these groups, would have been 4 or 5 when NA was founded. So it's kind of, although NA's had a massive influence on the groups that come immediately after it, it's moved on a lot, hasn't it? Sort of. So it's, someone now is getting, who's a teenager, getting involved in these sorts of networks, often start online, then go into the real world. I don't know to what extent they'd be looking at NA. I mean, NA didn't, but despite Ben Raymond seeing himself as this ideologue, and he coined the term white jihad and other things, like the founder of Iron March, Slavros, produced texts and things which were kind of doing the rounds long after Iron March had disappeared. So that had like a longer life because of the ideas and the kind of material. And NA, Raymond didn't really produce anything like that, but the propaganda definitely was like very, very visual and very, very much had an influence. And one of the things I think about it is because it was so, I think it's sort of like a bit of a lesson for the media as well, because NA very much, when it was before the ban, got so much attention because it did all of these publicity stunts and everything else, a bit like Anjum Chowdhury and Al Madroon, that they knew how to be outrageous. And by being outrageous, they'd get in the paper. But, and other things, like just as Anjum Chowdhury used to kind of turn up and celebrate 9/11, for example, and that would get in the paper because everyone would be shocked and outraged. But they kind of got with it because they got the attention they want. And Raymond, definitely, that was all of a part of the plan. And, when the police officer was on trial, the guy who was a member of the police, Ben Hannam, he was on trial at the Old Bailey for being a member of NA. And he basically, when he gave evidence, he sort of said, well, I joined this group. I saw Ben Raymond being interviewed on the BBC. So I thought, that was his defence. One of his things. It must be okay. So I think there's a sort of a lesson really around these groups caught attention for a reason. You know what I mean? That it sort of And I know that's, I've always taken the view that, you know, we, for example, Sonnenkrieg, like, you know, you were, when we worked together, you know, we saw all the, all their propaganda, like all the propaganda that was very extreme.
Right, threatening to shoot Prince Charles, was it, or was it Harry?
And when, you know, they were talking about wanting to, you know, encouraging violence against Prince Harry and other things. But we only ever, I was only ever going to ever say anything about that group once we were exposing people in the group.
Right, right. It wasn't like, it wasn't like doing their job for them by being like, look, everything they do, let's show everybody.
That's sort of my view. It's the same with like the base.
There has to be a reason for showing it. You can't just show it for the same reason they're showing it to then add a, oh, this is bad. Like,
I think that's what they, because with the base, we first did a story in the base when we were exposing the leader of the base. Like, so that's sort of like, I think they want the attention. And so, and they, you know, I think maybe like NA, hopefully that's a bit of a legacy that people will see. Well, these groups caught attention for a reason because they know it gets their message out.
Yeah, definitely. It was a very bombastic group, and I think they really understood how to play that game before anybody else. But after they did it, you know, the cat's out the bag, and you can see it to this day. The legacy definitely lives on within the propaganda, within the way these new groups put their stuff out. Even if you look at Telegram, the way they, the graphics, the way it's put together, that wouldn't exist without National Action, definitely not.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, if people want to read your work, Daniel, where's the best way to look out for what you're doing or get in touch with you or, you know, send you leads or anything like that?
Yeah, no, in fact, I'm on Twitter, if it's at @DDesimoniDaniel on Twitter, on X, should I say. I'm on Instagram and others, but I'm not. I'm pretty useless on Instagram, but I'm on there and my email's on there, so people can definitely find me there and do get in touch as well, please. It would be great to hear from anyone.
Brilliant. We'll put it in the link of the thing. Thanks very much, mate. Really appreciate that.
Cheers, mate. Much appreciated.
That was Skeleton Key, a popular front project focused on contemporary far-right militant groups. Music by Sam Black. Sound mix by Splicing Block. If you pirated this episode, alright, but please consider supporting at patreon.com/popularfront. We are entirely independent, grassroots conflict journalism. No one owns us, no one has a single share. We do not take money from bastards.